You're listening to the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie, episode 34, with my guest, Sergeant Jessica Crowley.
Welcome to the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie. If you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or emergency medical professional who would like to improve your family relationships, your physical and mental health, and want to have success at work and at home, well, this show is for you. Welcome to the Get Balanced program. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie. My special guest today is Jessica Crowley, and Jessica is a business owner of Aspire Winning Edge for the past 5 years, but has also served for the past 26 years. She is a sergeant with a police department just outside of Chicago. Welcome to the show, Jessica.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, well, I appreciate you coming on, and I know we've talked, and I got to learn a little bit about your business side of things with Aspire Winning Edge. And I want to go into that a little bit, but before we do, if you could give us a little history about 26 years in law enforcement and the different hats that you have worn during that time, perhaps a little bit of that. Wow.
I spent 9 years in patrol and was promoted to sergeant. And during that time, I had my hands kind of in all different areas of the police department, to include sergeant of field training and our community service officers. What changed for me was when I was sent to crisis intervention training about 8 years ago and learned all about mental health in law enforcement, which is something that we were never trained in coming on out of the academy and throughout our career. And it was truly transforming to me. It changed what and how I did the job. I mean, I actually thought I knew how to do the job pretty well, 13, mm-hmm. 14 years in. And that training was life-changing for me. I really felt as if I began to know how to police for the first time.
Oh, wow.
And became a coordinator for our crisis intervention team and have done lots of various things with that, which we can get into. But that was truly an incredible shift for me in my policing career.
Now, if you could sort of share with the listeners, I mean, what was it about that? I mean, with the mental health component, I mean, what in simple terms, what was so transformative?
Because it applies to everybody. There's this big mental health spectrum, right? Mental health to mental illness, and everybody falls somewhere on that line, and we move all throughout that spectrum ourselves, and we watch other people traverse it also. And when we're not given education as far as mental health, different, mental illnesses, it's very difficult to connect and relate to people. And a lot of the things that we do in law enforcement, they are counterproductive to interacting with people under, crisis when they have mental illnesses. And so to be given tools and skills and an understanding about these different mental illnesses, and even how to communicate, how to ask them the right questions, how to create more distance, it enabled us to even be more safe as law enforcement, and yet do some really amazing stuff and get people to the resources that they needed. It was not dealing with social work like many people think crisis intervention is. So many people believe that our job isn't social work and we don't do social work. It's really just this incredible knowledge of how to communicate and connect with people to get them the assistance that they wouldn't normally know existed.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty cool thing.
Yes.
It's pretty awesome.
Well, good. Now tell us how, I imagine that, that interest of yours and the excitement that you've had over the years, every entrepreneurial has a story behind why they start what they started. Tell us a little bit about Aspire Winning Edge.
As an athlete in college, I played basketball, and I had statistics that pretty much any D1 college would love in their program, except I lacked the character that went with it. I was pretty aggressive. I played with a lot of emotion and frustration, and found myself at a juncture where I couldn't get a scholarship, and I didn't understand why recruiters weren't looking at me with the statistics that I had on paper.
Yeah.
So when I got hired onto the police department, I was playing in a guns and hoses game. The police department played the fire department, and that side of my personality showed up during the middle of a game, playing basketball in front of the community. And I got in a fight with a fireman on the court. And I went, whoa, there's something here. Like, what is it about how I'm showing up? What's sparking that? And it wasn't too long after that I had a duty related injury. And that injury would send me home for about 18 months. I was off and on crutches and in and out of casts for 18 months.
Wow.
And was really alienated. I went from being an athlete to not being an athlete.
Yeah.
I went from being important, being a cop, to being a nobody, being independent, to being dependent upon my husband. And it was a really big struggle. There was some moments where I could see how people would fall into depression. Maybe perhaps I was battling with some of those moments myself. And I could see how people would turn to painkillers or alcohol. I didn't do either of those, but mentally, I wasn't in a really great spot. Once I returned back to work, I said, wow, this is how organizationally we're doing a disservice to our employees. They're having duty-related injuries, and we're sending them home, and we're letting them sit and be alone, and we're not connecting with them. We're not helping them.
Yeah.
And that really was important to me, to make sure that in the future we had that contact with our employees, that we built their wellness to some extent. I just didn't know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was years later that I went to a coaching school to become a life coach. And I learned all of these tools, all of these skills that allowed me to knock down these walls I had built up around me as a child, but they were doing more harm than good as an adult.
Yeah.
And once I recognized how to do that, I said, wow, there's something here. Nobody ever told me what skills and tools to use as an athlete to control my emotion, control my energy, to help my character and be better and more consistent on the court. Nobody showed me, taught me these skills and these tools to help me be successful once I returned back to duty from a duty-related injury.
Mm-hmm.
How cool is it that I had all these skills and tools and knowledge that I never had before, that I knew in law enforcement and in the fire departments, in EMS, in telecommunications, that I could teach people and they could become a better version of who they wanted to be?
Yeah.
By just providing them these skills and these tools. And that's how I created the business. That's where it all started.
And you've been running at it and helping and coaching others for just over 5 years, it looks like.
I have. I've mixed the coaching part of it. I mixed with getting certified as a hypnotist. So I do a lot of hypnosis in addition to brain spotting, heart math, neuroscience concepts with the autonomic nervous system, educating people about their sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems and how we as first responders have all of these things happening physiologically that nobody teaches us.
Yeah.
It's those reasons why we come home and we say, I don't want to go somewhere. No, you make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
nobody knows why they feel that way. Why they don't have the motivation. Why they're tired all the time. Why they feel like they're removed from their family and they kind of withdraw. Well, there's reasons for all of that. They just don't know what they are. And we as a profession fail our people by not teaching and educating them and normalizing it, saying it's okay. Your body's doing everything it is supposed to. And here's how you can help yourself.
Yeah. And I definitely want to put a link to your business, which I will in the show notes once it gets posted. And for my listeners out there, if I happen to say anything that doesn't sound correct, or if I say something that is too funny out there, just understand that I am on Zoom and she may have me underneath hypnosis at the moment. She keeps waving something in across the screen. I'm wondering what that is. Now, I've always been fascinated by hypnosis. I have not been hypnotized, but I am always willing to. But I find it fascinating, which anything to do with the mind, I think, is fascinating. And so with that, with being a law enforcement officer and a coach, high performance coach, and the things that you're teaching out there, let me shift hats just a little bit, because you're getting into all this the self-care, the physical care, the mental health, and all of that. And I want to go there. But before I do, I always like to get to know you personally a little bit more. So if you could tell us a little bit about, I heard you say a husband, you know, about the family and things like that.
I'm a very happy wife. Married for 27 years this August. He too was in law enforcement for 25 years, since retired. And we have three beautiful, wonderful children, all girls, family of girls. And they are all adopted Chinese. And the reason I mention that is just because as a female in law enforcement and as a mother of minority children, it's been an interesting ride on the diversity end of things. So it's a pretty cool part of our family journey in experiencing the Asian culture. We actually hosted a foreign exchange student 12 years ago. And so I'm the proud grandma of a 6-year-old little boy. And so she is part of our family, just like our girls. It's been wonderful.
Yes. Now, are your girls sisters by birth? Any of them?
Not by birth, not biologically. Mm. And they are amazing. They are everything. So I'm pretty selfish on those days off. On any free moments, I want them with me all the time, which sometimes doesn't work well for them.
and to put things into perspective, could you share their ages with us?
Absolutely. My foreign exchange student daughter in California, she turned 30 this year. My next one is 19, 17. I have a little munchkin who's 12. That process was about a 5-year process when China opened up their adoption program to their own country. It was after a very significant natural disaster and many children were killed. They decided that they would allow their own citizens to adopt children within their country. Wonderful, wonderful. The process ended up changing to adopt. And so it took us 5 years to get our little one. And we held out and we held out, and she was our little miracle baby. So it was bittersweet.
Wow. That's a wonderful story. So tell us about some of the activities. So if you're still full-time law enforcement, correct?
I am.
You have your business. Now someone would be saying, wow, where's that work-life balance?
I do.
How do you do it?
I have a a whole system of self-care. In order to care for others, you really have to care for yourself first. And
amen to that.
That's absolutely first and foremost. So I manage what I do in the business to ensure that I have that self-care time for me. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, last year I spent over 800 hours between May and September training for a Grand Canyon rim to rim to rim hike. It was a 45 and a half ish mile hike.
Yeah.
And so I spent lots of time training, but was still able to manage running a business, working, and spending time with my family. So it depends on how you use your time.
I completely agree with you. And mm-hmm. I completely agree also from the self-care, right? How well we take care of ourselves. And you know, we have to fill our own cup so that we can pour it out onto others. And that has been the basis of my research in my PhD work has always been how does self-care contribute to work-life balance? And then what the research has discovered, if you will, is that it truly is the greater we take care of ourselves, the greater we care we can do in our career, as well as with our families, is what it is showing out there. Like it's
I can't agree with that more.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
But it's so different, isn't it, from first responders, you generally type A personalities, gung ho, put themselves out on the line, which of course that's what we do. However, I think it's just a little bit of that cultural shift that, you know, you and I and some of the listeners, you know, we're preaching to the choir here, is that, you know, we're trying to shift that culture to say, hey, let's not forget that, you know, you need to take care of yourself. That's critically important. How have you seen the culture changing, say perhaps in your department or departments that you're familiar with? Are you starting to see some change with the health and wellness initiatives that have been going on? Are you starting to see some cultural change where people are stepping up and saying, you know what, I need to do this?
I believe law enforcement and fire departments across the country are really making great strides in creating wellness programs for their employees. We, as a whole, I believe that we all know what it is that we need to do to stay healthy. We need to eat well, we need to exercise, except people run into this problem, but I don't have energy. I don't know. I know I need to do these things, but I still go and I eat unhealthy. And it's because they're not given the knowledge about why their body needs the foods that they're craving and how they can offset that. So I believe, yes, we're making great strides. We have more first responder wellness conferences than we ever have had. We are creating more awareness. It's becoming okay to say we're not okay. Those are all phenomenal and great things. It's possibly furthering that by teaching people what other options are there outside of therapy, traditional style therapy. So yoga and meditation and mindfulness, different modalities, like I mentioned, as far as brain spotting, EMDR, hypnosis, whatever it is, it's giving people that option and that knowledge that's available to them. And it's equally as effective. One of the components that I believe that we need to get even better at is talking about, when we say stigma around wellness, stigma around mental health, and smashing the stigma and talking mm-hmm. about it's okay not to be okay. What I learned through my own experience is that when I sat in front of a practitioner, a therapist, to get assistance when I knew something was affecting not just my professional life, but my personal life. Mm-hmm. And I sat to do that self-care that we talked about, that need to have self-care. I had an awareness and I knew I needed an intervention with a professional, even as a professional. It was that absolute fear that you experience when you sit in front of somebody and you say, well, holy smokes, if I begin to talk about this and I open the floodgates, what if stuff comes out of me that I didn't even know existed? And what if I emote and I break down and I can't effectively do my job after I've spent my entire career building up all of these emotional barriers to help me disassociate with the crap that we see every day? What happens when I open that gate? Am I going to be able to continue doing my job, or am I going to have to quit? And it's that fear, that initial fear when you're sitting in front of somebody saying, you know, I'd rather keep all that shit inside. I don't want to let it go, because what if? And I experienced that absolute and total and utter fear sitting in front of a therapist that I had reached out to work with me doing some brain spotting. And for those people who don't know what brain spotting is, it's a derivative of EMDR. In EMDR, it's using the eyes to access areas of the brain in the unconscious mind, subconscious mind, to be able to let go of trauma. Brain spotting was derived from that process. And so as I sat in front of the therapist, I looked and I said, I don't want to be here. I'm scared to death. What if I start this process and I go to work tomorrow and I'm weaker, emotionally weaker, and I'm not able to separate what's under the uniform, what's behind that uniform, to what's happening in front of me? What if I break down? Yeah. And my therapist looked at me and said, well, Jessica, guess what? What if you sit here and you open those gates and you get everything out of you and you close those gates forever, and it makes you an even better cop, makes you an even better wife, a better mom? What if it does even more for you and makes you safer? And I went, holy crap, let's go. Like, let's do this. Yeah. And it was hard. Yeah. But that's the education. As we talk about work-life balance, we talk about getting ourselves self-care. It's knowing that those feelings of fear, of the unknown, of feeling vulnerable, that moment of vulnerability, that is what gives us even more control and creates an environment for us that is even more safe. Mm-hmm. So the concepts behind being worried and concerned about making it us weak or emotionally breaking down those barriers, it's not accurate. Yeah. We actually become more safe. We have more control when we get rid of all of that stuff that is preventing us from seeing everything else that's in front of us, whether it's at home or whether it's on the job. So this self-care component, if we're able as a first responder community to go out and seize an opportunity to strengthen our own performance, to get more skills and knowledge, to do things even better, mm-hmm. to strengthen our relationships and our families, to be able to connect with the community and our peers, to be able to recognize and notice things that are happening around us that we wouldn't have seen because we're carrying all that crap with us that we didn't know existed. Oh my gosh, why wouldn't we all begin this journey of self-care now, today?
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to be working with the Kane County Sheriff's Department. Sheriff Ron Hain recognized that what I do and how I work with employees was a great gift to give his employees. And so I work for a county sheriff's department providing wellness services with what I do to sworn and non-sworn personnel. And it's been an amazing opportunity. And I'm so grateful for what he's given me.
That is outstanding. And, There needs to be a way that we can hear more success stories about that, or maybe some writings and things like that. Because it's happening. And that's where I'm sort of feeling is that, you know, I've been doing this for a while and people are talking about it, but on one hand, yeah, I still, you know, I go to a health and wellness seminars. I just went to one last October, and at the health and wellness seminar, they had the area's famous donuts all lined up for breakfast. And I literally, when I saw it, Jessica, I laughed. I was like, health and wellness, you know, are we really going down this path? You know, because it truly, we need to start changing. And that goes for all of us. We need to start aligning our day-to-day behaviors with what we deem as a priority in life. And if we're going to say health and wellness is a priority, then we do need to make the changes. We do need to do the exercise, eat well, eat better, drink less. You know, the different things that we know, as you said earlier, we know what to do. It comes down to how do we really get it done? And with that, could you talk a little bit about how do you fit? I mean, how do you, you're a cop, former athlete, so, and current athlete, you know, with all that you do, how does exercise affect your mental health? Let me ask that. Do you feel like there's an effect from exercise to mental health?
I love this question because for me personally, my athletic journey started during a time in my life where if I didn't have the sports that I had in school, I probably would have committed suicide.
Oh, wow.
It is the one thing that saved me. My family life, my upbringing, it was, everybody has a story, right? I fit into that. I have a story. And so sports was where I immersed myself. And not only did I get that extrinsic motivation from coaches where I would go to practice and I would work really hard, and the harder I worked, they'd go, oh my gosh, nice job. And it was like a drug. I was like, whoa, my God, I got a compliment. That's so awesome. Yeah. And it was my outlet. It was my therapy. I didn't have any other way to get what I was experiencing my home life out of me. And I recognized that was through sports. It was my outlet, but that followed me even through college where I couldn't manage my energy. I played with so much emotion.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that how I did my self-care when I was younger was through sports and the incredible chemical releases that we get in our brain when we exercise. And the effect is so much longer than the effect we have when we eat a candy bar or we crave food. And sure, we all know what to eat, but we don't get that immediate gratification that we want unless we eat something that's junk food, right? So to speak. So we get that instant gratification in our brain, that release of, wow, this tastes so good, but then we crash. Where with fitness and wellness, when we go to that and gravitate to fitness and wellness, when we engage in physical activity, and I'm not talking about having to go to the gym for an hour. I'm talking about brief moments of doing a couple flights of stairs or walking around the block or doing a couple push-ups, whatever it is, we are then releasing those chemicals into our body. And that's exactly what we need. And that feeling that we get lasts so much longer than if we were to eat food. So it's talking to people about the sustainability of those good chemicals, the cortisol and oxytocins and all of that, that's released into our bodies through exercise. You know, obviously with cortisol, that's a different kind of topic when we talk about the body and first responders and their cortisol levels and adrenal fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
Which so many people aren't familiar with, but exercise can reverse the effects of adrenal fatigue, can reverse the effects of why we feel lethargic, why we don't have energy. So when we adapt and bring in physical fitness, so I still use it every day as much as I can. I have some limitations. I've had lots and lots of surgeries over the course of the last 20 some years. I've had 23 surgeries on my left leg and bilateral hip replacements. And those moments in time where I'm in recovery, therapy wise, that's where I struggle the most mentally, because I don't have that ability to engage in that exercise that I need to get everything out of me therapeutically. So it is, it's phenomenal. It's so important. It's one of my needs. I don't want to exercise. I need to, I want to, and I thrive on it with a happy balance. With a happy balance.
There's always a happy balance. That's right. You know, another area of self-care is spiritual wellness. Has spirituality, in whether it is prayer, meditation, walking in nature, hiking the Grand Canyon, as you were mentioning, has spiritual wellness, is that a part of your self-care program?
I believe that, yes, to answer your question, yes, spirituality is. And it really comes down to how we define that spirituality, since we're all so unique and so different. And so all of our definitions are different. So I view spirituality as a really broad area. Just like you said, we don't need to just look at it as far as the religious component. And our faith is a big component of our own wellness. There are so many other factors that are involved in spirituality. And one of those are our basic beliefs and values, our personal beliefs and values. And I believe that that's such a huge component about mental health and the wellness of our employees, is when mental health begins to be affected, it's because there's some type of a conflict with their personal beliefs and values and the beliefs and values of an organization that they're working for. There is a conflict that happens, and they're not aware of it. And when we work with people and we talk to them about their beliefs, about their values, and what's important to them and how they live their life, their sense of purpose, and we correlate that to their beliefs and values, and we begin to talk about what's happening at work or at home, and you see that there's a conflict between beliefs and values, that's where the mental wellness issues I see really, really can be worked on in a positive way, to acknowledge and recognize what those conflicts are and how they can utilize this conflict in a positive way to create great opportunities to change what and how they do things for themselves.
Yeah. Now, how do you manage your spiritual wellness? Is it through that sort of like the prayer or the meditation or being in nature, or there could be others out there? Those are just sort of the three top that come to mind.
I ensure that my values and beliefs align with everything that I do. And when I feel that conflict, I look at those beliefs and values and say, okay, what's taking place here? Mm-hmm. Love nature. In addition to doing self-hypnosis daily, we are all in hypnosis 80% of our day. So this is not out of the norm. Most people don't recognize the fact that they're in hypnosis 80% of their day.
There's a little education on that. What do you mean?
Sure. Hypnosis, people have a fear of hypnosis. They believe that it's some type of voodoo practice, that they're going to fall under a spell and be made to do things that they don't want to do. In actuality, it's quite the opposite. Hypnosis is being hyper-focused. Mm-hmm. So when we can use it for example, example, when we're driving and we go from point A to point B and you get to the end place and you go, oh my gosh, I don't even remember how I got here. Your mind is going, you're thinking about other things, but you're still driving and you're driving safely. You're in highway hypnosis. When yes. you're in a movie and you're sitting next to somebody and you're engaged in the movie and you're so intent and something scary happens and you jump, or you feel yourself getting emotional while you're watching a specific part of a movie, you're in hypnosis. You're hyper-focused and you are so intent on what you're watching that you're feeling it. And that's all hypnosis is. So we are all in hypnosis about 80% of the day. We are so hyper-focused on what we're doing, we don't really know what's happening around us. So to do self-hypnosis, all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. There's nothing weird or scary or unusual about it. So it's all, we just guide people into hypnosis, but they're doing hypnosis on their own. It's such a powerful tool to use because there's so many things that we can do, positive suggestions. We kind of bypass the critical mind, the thinking mind, and we access our subconscious mind. And so we have the ability to give ourselves positive suggestions. And what happens in hypnosis is we're just simply changing our brain wavelengths. There's all different wavelengths that we have: beta, alpha, delta, theta. And when we slow those wavelengths down, we become more suggestible. This is that period right before we go to bed, 20 minutes before we go to bed, 20 minutes when we wake up in the morning. That's when we're most suggestible. We can give ourselves positive suggestions during those times because our wavelengths in our brain are at that same state that we're in hypnosis. So hypnosis is a phenomenal tool. It's fantastic. Some people correlate it to meditation. Some people correlate it to mindfulness. Mm-hmm. Some people correlate it to visual imagery. A lot of us will use the word hypnosis, the hypnotist or hypnotherapist, because the word is such an unusual word and so scary for some people, we'll just say, hey, let's practice some visual imagery. And a lot of it has to do with our languaging.
Yeah.
I mean, notice it's as if this, and all of a sudden your mind wanders. I can do a simple exercise and say, okay, Donnie, with your eyes open, eyes closed, it doesn't really matter, but just go back to a place in your life where you went somewhere where you experienced total and complete relaxation and you had not a care in the world and you felt completely relaxed, comfortable, and safe. And when you get there, notice what you hear. Notice the smells. Notice the sounds. Are you sitting down or are you lying down? Are you inside or outside? Is it warm or is it cold? And as I talk and your mind goes to that place, notice what you notice. Where did your memory go? Mm-hmm. You were just in hypnosis. It's that easy. So I use hypnosis daily. I love it. It's the coolest thing in the entire world. It's amazing. But I also have my own practitioners for my own self-care. We have an on-staff police psychologist that works with us at our agency just for personnel. She's incredible. Yeah. So we have that. We have a police chaplain. She's amazing. I have a brain spotting practitioner up in Neenah, Wisconsin. So all of these facets, when we talk about self-care, it can be all different people for all different reasons. And, you know, it's whatever works for the individual. And it doesn't need to be a lengthy amount of time. It can be 5 minutes.
Yeah.
10 minutes. It could be heart math. It could be heart focused breathing to work on your heart rhythm, to build coherence in your autonomic nervous system. Again, stuff that we typically aren't taught, that are so easy to provide first responders with this information, even how to engage their polyvagal nerve. Who knew? Huge tool to reset our autonomic nervous system. Why? Because as first responders, we're all over the board.
Right. Right.
Well, why not create these tools, these powerful things that they're not sitting in front of you necessarily needing to emote, but they're in turn getting skills and tools so that they can move forward from where they are today to where they want to be. So it's pretty powerful.
Well, thank you for that, Jessica. Very intriguing. It's got me thinking. And I love all that. And let me shift a little bit from self-care to taking you back to, I wanted to ask you, as a mother and law enforcement officer, do you find other mothers that are in first responders, do you find it perhaps more challenging to find the time for self-care, and work on the work-life balance component more than your male counterparts that are fathers?
Wow, I can't even answer that. It's so unique to everybody, whether mm-hmm. you're male, female, whether you're a mom or your dad. I think the key to all of it is managing your work life, leaving it at work and coming home, and knowing that we are not our title. We don't come home and we're not a cop. You know, so much of what's ingrained in us is you're a cop 24/7. You're a cop 24/7. Well, we begin to live that title. And when male or female, when you leave the agency, whether you can have this image of wiping your feet on a doormat before you come into the house or hanging up that outside coat on a hook outside of your door to walk in and leave that stuff at work and transition to home. Not that that's always possible. We're human beings. We're going to, mm-hmm. we are who we are, but we are not our title. And our role as a parent, as a spouse, as a parent, whatever role you play. It's so important to be able to find that work-life balance that you talk about. And that's what we're emphasizing here is how is it that we can provide people this work-life balance? And it's saying, hey, you are who you are. We can ask the question, who are you really?
Yeah.
If we are not our title, and we're not, we aren't the title as just a mom or a wife for me. I am me. And I need to be able to not necessarily bottle everything up and keep it hidden from my family. But there is this interesting part of recognizing when we're influenced by things that happen on the job and they begin to creep into our family life. Mm-hmm. That's the moment. That is the key moment where we build that awareness and say, perhaps maybe I need to go talk to a buddy, or I need to go exercise, or I need to reach out to a social worker or a psychologist or practice mindfulness, whatever it looks like. So I can't answer what you asked because I don't know. I can only speak from my own experience and my knowledge of what it's been like for me.
Mm-hmm.
In that need to address and get out in the open the fact that we are more than our title. Our title doesn't define us. And I started my career promising myself, because again, I'm married to a cop, and he would come home and he would wear his uniform home. His radio was in his car. He was everything 100% cop all the time. That worked for him. That's great. That wasn't for me. I didn't want that. I didn't wear my uniform home. I leave my uniforms, all of them are at work. I don't have a uniform at home. And I love my career. I'm so blessed and so grateful for the career that I've had. And I love my job. I don't have anything police related in my home. When I come home, I'm a mom, I'm a wife. And when I leave and I go to work, well, that's when the fun begins. That's when I put my uniform on and I get excited and I get to go to work.
Did you always operate that way, or did it take a little time to develop that habit?
I was fortunate enough to watch my husband in what he was doing, and knowing that when I got hired on the job in 94, this was how I was going to do it. So I started those habits early on. I just had a conversation with my shift last night about this exact same topic, about knowing that we aren't our title, and how to ensure that we have interests outside of the job, that we become who we are at home. We have hobbies and friends outside of the PD, and that we are not living this job 24/7, because in actuality, we are just an employee. And that's what I learned when I had that duty related injury. I thought I was more than that. I thought I meant something to the community. I was important. And really, I was just an employee to the agency. In whether I stayed or whether I went, the agency would continue operating and running. And when we look at it and say our role is important, but we are just an employee.
Yes.
We need to find a way to know who we are inside and be okay with that, and know that the uniform doesn't define us.
Right. That was very, very good advice. And behind the screen where I'm looking at the video or the camera, I have on my wall, it's a gift that I received from one of my daughters. She hand painted this little piece. It says, "To the world, you are a dad. To our family, you are the world." And that thing touched me so much, to where it's like,
it's awesome.
You know, I am a dad, and I love being a dad, but sometimes we don't know how these roles that we play in life, the meaning that they are to other people. And I always try to keep that in mind, that you know, it's when we're in a role, it's trying to be that focused and provide that attention and give them, let them know that you're actively listening when you're in. And I love your examples of how you don't bring the uniform home, you know, it works at work and home is at home. And because what you're doing must work well, because people are saying, wait a minute, two cops married for 27 years. What's the secret here?
Oh, I won the lottery. That's the secret. Definitely won the lottery. And don't get me wrong, Donnie. There are days where I bring the job home with me.
It's only natural.
It's only human. I mean, you cannot separate. Who I am at work is who I am at home. But there are things that we can do to create an environment where work is work. It's a job. And what I wanted to just take a minute to touch on something I think is vital when we talk about self-care, especially for law enforcement, and something that's oftentimes missed. We do a great job creating these walls to not become emotionally affected. Right? We build all these amazing walls so that we can disassociate with all the stuff that we handle on the street. And that's really amazing. But what really truly affects us oftentimes is what happens internally in the agency. And when we're involved in investigations and internals, nobody teaches us and tells us that that is an attack on our character. That stuff that is personal. You know, I can go to this on the street and I can be called every name in the book. It doesn't bother me. I can see stuff. It doesn't bother me because I'm not emotionally connected and I have a job to do. But when it's stuff that happens within our agencies and it's attack on your own person and it gets behind the vest, that's when these emotions start shifting and we're affected because we don't want to do things wrong. We don't want to be investigated. We don't do things with intent. And now it's attack on our personal side.
Yeah.
But yet we're still in a uniform. And, you know, organizations, when we're talking about wellness and self-care for employees moving forward, I believe one of the key things is having a process that allows for a change. Well, I don't know what that is, whether it's education, whether it's a change in what we do, whether it's educating our employees throughout the process and saying, hey, we're investigating you, but how you doing? This is what's happening. We're sending you home. You're on paid administrative leave, or you have a pending internal investigation. But by the way, are you doing okay? What can we do to help you?
Yeah.
We can investigate, but investigate the officer, help the employee, help the person. And in law enforcement, we constantly supervise and treat people as the physician instead of supervising and taking care of the person.
Right. The whole person. Yeah.
The whole person. And so that is a huge component when we talk about wellness moving forward, that agencies who are looking to make changes in their wellness. And Chief Neil Gang, this is a chief that has done amazing stuff for his employees. And that is taking your beliefs and putting them into action. He practices what he preaches, and he does an amazing, phenomenal job, not just with what he gives his employees, but what he believes they should have as not only officers, but people.
Yes.
He takes care of the whole, it's a holistic approach and not just focus on the actual position of what they do. Fantastic. And I would say to go further, when we're involved in investigations in-house, when things are happening internally, we don't need to send people home and not have people talk to or connected with. If we remove job, you know, titles or positions from an officer because they're being investigated or they're not performing, well, then let's reach out to them in a week and a half, 2 weeks, and say, hey, just wanted to touch base. Yeah. How you doing? I know that we're doing this, and I know that we have you away from the PD and on leave or whatever the case is, but how are you? Do you need any resources? That's how we change things.
Right.
Is we need to begin to supervise and look at our people as people and lead the person rather than the employee. And when management, administration, first line supervisors can begin to do that, I think we'll have even more successful changes in our wellness and we'll reduce potentially police suicides across the board.
Yes. Yeah.
It's so hugely important. We talk about this thin blue line and this band of law enforcement. And I would argue that that's only prevalent in death, that thin blue line and taking care of each other, that only happens when we lose one of our own. Let's do that and take care of each other in life.
Right.
Let's be supportive. Let's reach out to people. Let's take that extra minute or time, you know, minute of the day to say, hey, how you doing?
I could not agree with you more, Jessica. And I believe that is really where that new leadership role, I think, is heading and should head. And I call it sort of that whole person leadership. And that's what I preach about all the time, is that because, and I do this outside of first responders as well. If you lead the whole person and make sure, you know, they have that balanced life. And again, you know, it's essentially, what are their priorities in life and are they aligning their day-to-day behaviors with it? Because everybody has goals, ideas, things that they want to do in life. But as an organization, should we really be at odds with an individual's goals, or should we be congruent and help them? And, you know, if someone wants to spend more time with their family, wants to go to a Friday night football game to watch their teenage son play, or perhaps their daughter participate in the Friday night activities as well, does a leader promote swapping a shift for that? Why not if they're not? That time of that high school, using that as the example, those high school activities, I mean, it's a short window of time, but it's critical to the children, the teenagers, as well as the parents. So there are so many things. And you mentioned Neil. I was out there last month. I did a work-life balance workshop out for his officers and some staff members. And I really got to see to where he took me into their break room to where they have like these home cooked meals that are catered in. So as officers, they don't have to go and through the drive through and eat that food of fast food. They can come in, to the station, grab their meal that they pre-planned for the week. Basically, he has protein powder and shakes and fruit out and no sodas. You know, he took some of the sugary stuff out and put healthy food in, which is truly a guy that, you know, he's walking the talk when it comes to, hey, I mean it about wellness. And it was beautiful. I mean, a beautiful layout. And he really, I call it authentic leadership. And I tell him that all the time. I go, you know, you truly love and servant leadership, you truly love your people, and it shows. And that's where I think if we're really loving our folks, if we focus on them as that, as you're describing, that whole person, boy, it just seems like we all win. Everyone wins.
Well, and you know what we're building at the same time is we move from a place of individual officer wellness.
Yes.
And we move to a more holistic approach of creating organizational health. And that is much more powerful. When we shift our focus from individual officer wellness and we say, hey, let's take a look too at building and creating an even stronger organizational health, the sustainability is so much greater when we change the org health. But that's something that is very rarely discussed and talked about. And you can apply the whole concepts of what Patrick Lencioni writes in his books. He's an incredible author. He's the founder of the Table Group. And the reason I bring it up is he talks about the five dysfunctions or the five keys to a dysfunctional team. And he talks that the foundational principles of creating great organizational health, great teams, starts with trust.
Yes.
It starts with trust, conflict, and vulnerability. If you don't have trust, you can't be vulnerable. If you don't have trust, you can't be vulnerable, which means that there's no conflict. People don't feel as if they can come and speak their mind. There's no acceptance. There's no commitment. And so you're not getting good results. Mm-hmm. So if you look at that in terms now, instead of productivity, and you take Patrick Lencioni's concepts and you adapt them and look at them as far as wellness, right? We get rid of the individual officer wellness and say, how as an organization can we look at creating organizational health, creating a stronger culture, which then produces really good officer wellness? Because what is the linchpin that creates unhealthy officers? And usually it has to do with the organization, the overall environment of the organization.
I think you're onto something there.
it's huge. I mean, we have right now, Donnie, we through you and your message and what you are giving people through this podcast, what Neil and Cortico and everybody else is doing out there with first responders, we have the opportunity to change organizational health. Mm-hmm. We have an incredible opportunity, and it's something that should be brought into leadership classes, supervisory classes, is strengthening the leader from the inside out, knowing that we have the resources inside of us, but we have something bigger and something better, and that's learning these principles of trust and acceptance and vulnerability and accountability and commitment, and all of that over time will produce the results that most organizations are looking for, but it'll be sustainable. At the same time, it'll create inclusivity.
Yes.
Which is huge. So I your message about how and what Chief Gang has done through his organization speaks volumes to those steps that agencies are taking across. He's one. That's one organization. Can you imagine the movement that's taking place in organizations all across the country? It's fantastic. And I applaud all of those agencies that are taking even the smallest steps in introducing these wellness programs to their employees and in giving them opportunities to seek working with therapists quarterly,
right?
Or having embedded psychologists or social workers working with their staff. What a great thing. Stuff that was never available. Even when we talk about critical incident stress management and having the CISM teams come to agencies after critical incidents, so much more prevalent now than it ever was. That speaks volumes because people like you are getting that message out. Yeah. Huge.
Well, thank you for that. And thank you for your wisdom on this show. I've learned a lot, and so many things that I want to go learn even more about. And you know, when you talked about EMDR, if I have that correct, EMDR therapy, I know a little bit about it, and probably like a lot of listeners, and they're like, oh, what's that thing? Does that really work? Come on now, you know, things like that. But I have always heard that it produces wonderful results, very effective results. So there's a lot to it. And boy, I may just have to have you back for a second session, because I want to try to hold to the time of about an hour here, but I do want to try to wrap this up, Jessica, with, is there anything that I did not ask you that you wish I would have, or something that you would like to spend a little bit more time on?
I would love that invitation to come back and talk a little bit more about brain spotting and EMDR and the value behind it. Because those are two modalities where we as first responders don't need to engage in deep discussion and share traumas or strong emotions. We can do that processing internally, and it's extraordinarily effective.
Well,
and that's why we are trying to create so much more education around those modalities, so that people know that they don't have to share and be verbal in front of a practitioner of those particular modalities. They can sit and they can process through whatever it is for them, and they can leave and they can feel significantly different. So
I will take you up on that. So here's your open invitation. You have it. Awesome. We'll do a special episode for that.
That'd be great.
Yes. All right. Well, to close out the show, I want to thank you, Sergeant Jessica Crowley, of the law enforcement agency just outside of Chicago, and also the owner and entrepreneur of For High Performance, and it is Aspire Winning Edge, her company that she has had for over 5 years. And I love the wisdom and the stories that you shared with us today on the podcast. Truly, it is inspiring. And it, you know, it's like I spend an hour as we have with each other, but I am actually more energized than actually it has taken energy to do a podcast. So every time that happens, I know that, wow, that, you know, I know that my mind is just racing, and I'm sure a lot of listeners are as well, is that they're thinking, you know, there is a lot of great stuff happening out there. And I really love, Jessica, the piece about creating organizational health. Is that we start looking at it from that way, and what can we do, we as leaders of these organizations. So thank you very much for that, and I'll let you have the last word.
Well, I appreciate it. I thank you so much for inviting me on the show. It's been an honor, truly. And I just take care and be well.
Thank you very much.
You too. Thank you.
Hey, if you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or EMS professional who enjoys this podcast and would like some help with your work-life balance, you need to check out my Get Balanced program. Not sure if you are balanced or not? Join me over at DonnieHutchinson.com and take the quiz. Together, we are going to get you balanced.